Welcome to Accounting High.
We are fiscal doctors as opposed to physical medical doctors. People come to an accountant because they want to be fiscally healthy. We know the numbers. We know the processes.
Fiscally fit.
We know ways to look at things to give them ideas how to improve what they're doing. They may know their businesses. We may not know their businesses. But when we look at the numbers and we see variances, we see KPIs that are out of balance with everybody else in the similar industry, it lets us look and help them grow.
Welcome back to our class. It's the guide. Please take a seat. Step into this unique guidance session. Navigate with me. It's the capital S. Oh, yes, I'm fresh. C-double-O-T. Y apostrophe. O-K-R apostrophe. C. Yeah. Janitor Scott. Coming to you live from the closet with a bucket and a mop. So find a cozy spot. We all want financial freedom. A-C-C-O-U-N-T-I-N-G-H-I-G-H. Preach. Putting this course together. Sit back. Relax. Open your mind. Classes in session.
Guidance. Class at Accounting High.
Introducing the star of our show.
David Bergstein and Scotty.
We're going to have a problem here.
Class is in session. Dave Bergstein since 1966. CPA, not CPA since 1966. Or have you?
No, a little bit later. I graduated in 68. Been doing accounting since probably 62 in community college where I took accounting and I did taxes for my non-accounting major friends.
Oof. All right. So, Dave, you've been in and around the accounting profession for a long, long time. You say on Twitter that you're a millennial stuck in a boomer's body. You're calling me from Orlando today, originally from Brooklyn, New York. Why don't you tell our student, yeah, Brooklyn in the house. Big ups to Brooklyn. You're a pickleball enthusiast as well. Accounting Today's Top 100 for a few years, starting back in 2015. You come here to tell me that the future of accounting may not be CPA.
I think the future of accounting is changing. You know, and even the articles that I'm reading, you know, about CPA, non-CPA, and every CPA firm is hiring non-CPAs. And I've been a CPA, I think, since 73, CPA, CITP, CGMA, Notary Public. I can marry you in Florida. Not you personally. I'm not looking to marry you. But I can perform the service as a notary.
You got a lot of letters hanging out behind your name.
When I get bored, I take a test. You know, it doesn't mean I'm any smarter than the next guy.
You got to earn your stripes, though, all right? And you have many stripes behind your name. You got your CPA with the original intent. Why? That's what I want to hear first, is why'd you go into accounting in the first place? You went in early, way, you're one of the earliest guests to go into accounting I've had on this show. So tell me, why accounting?
I like the polite way of saying I'm old, earliest guest to go into accounting. I like the way you said that.
Maybe Ed Mendlowitz was the earliest guest. Maybe you're on par with him there.
I might be a little older, I don't know. But there was this show growing up on TV called The Untouchables. Now, I don't know if you ever heard of that show. It was this guy, Elliot Ness from the FBI, going after this guy, Al Capone. And I said, hey, that seems like fun. I want to be like Elliot Ness. And to be Elliot Ness, you had to be an FBI agent. You had to be working for the government. And to be an FBI agent in 1960s, you had to either be a CPA or an attorney. So I said, let me do that. I'll become a CPA and I'll go work for the FBI. Okay, I took the test. I failed the eye test because in those days you needed 20/20. I think.
And now you're getting cataracts.
Right. Well, now I got rid of the cataracts. So because I couldn't become an FBI agent, when you said I've done everything I have, I became an IRS agent instead.
But you became an agent.
Right.
Agent Bergstein.
Agent Bergstein. In those days, it was kind of interesting. It's not the same anymore. And then I worked my way up to chief of technical at the service center, where we actually picked returns for audit and various other things. And it was an exciting life.
That's an exciting job. My uncle works for the IRS, but it doesn't sound as exciting.
One time they tried to bribe me and I got wired. That was my most exciting time as an IRS agent.
You got almost bribed?
Almost bribed. Well, like I did get bribed, but it wasn't bribed because I was wired. I wired at the time. People were listening in. So we
You wiretapped. You had the wire on.
I had the wire on.
You caught somebody.
and we caught somebody, an attorney, as a matter of fact, who pleaded nolo contendere.
And you didn't go the attorney route to go to the FBI. You either had to be an attorney or a CPA. Now you're putting them away, the CPA route. Yeah. You're the third guest I've had that became a CPA because they wanted to get into the FBI. I guess you've always seen this as a glamorous, sexy job. This was like, you became the IRS agent, and that was cool. The way you're describing it, the way it was, accounting may not have ever seemed boring to you.
Well, it wasn't. Actually, being an IRS agent was my introduction into becoming a great salesperson.
What? Tell me this story.
Well, as an IRS agent, you dealt with professional CPAs and attorneys. And what do you have to sell them? You had to sell them on agreeing to the adjustment that the client was going to pay the government. So think about that. They had to sign the form, say, yes, we agree our client will pay $20,000, $30,000, because the return was incorrect or those things were wrong. Think about that.
Yeah, so no. But you could approach anything with a sales mindset. I love this, and I love this mindset. I don't think most people look at it like that. Most people look at it like it's a job and this is what they have to do and they're not trying to convince anybody of anything and they don't do a very good job at it. So I could see you excelling in any kind of role if you look at it like it's a game, it's sales, it's everybody's a participant in this game and you got to come to the table with your best game, your A game, if you're going to win this negotiation.
They have to agree to the adjustment. Otherwise, it's an unagreed case and it goes to review, it goes to conference, it goes to tax court. Got to deal professionally.
So,
pick up some skills.
What'd you end up doing after the IRS?
Well, I'm still doing that today. I adjunct teach at college, so I graduate. I get the high school students that come out of Accounting High. And I encourage them to take a career in accounting because it's not tedious and boring. And it's advisory services. I have my own CPA practice. I've sold it twice. I'm down to the end now. I'm trying to get rid of most of my clients. I have a few good clients left that have become friends. So I'm still doing work for them. I'm not taking new clients. I still get people calling me.
You're still doing client work.
You got it. I just got through doing 1099s and W-2s. Payroll taxes due January 31st. Small few, but it keeps me in touch with reality and the problems that people face.
So are you also doing some consulting or other types of odd things on the side?
Well, everything I do is odd, I guess. But most of my career has been spent working for the, we'll call them the big three tax and accounting companies. I spent a number of years at Computer Language Research, CLR, GoSystem, which was bought by Thomson Reuters, which is the heavy-duty software that most of the large accounting firms do. And then I spent some time at CCH, Wolters Kluwer. Then I spent some time at Intuit. In between that, I've been with Accounting World numerous times. Actually, still in touch with my old boss at Accountants World, who was the founder, who sold this company twice. Sold the first time to Thomson Reuters, second time to Iris just about 2 years ago, because they want to get into the accounting space. And he's got a couple of new ideas that he's pitching around to try to help CPAs and businesses. And then I'm also on the BDO IT Advisory Committee for the Alliance, the BDO Alliance, with Roman Kepchak, Randy Johnson, a couple of others.
Yeah, so we've got Randy Johnson, the K2s.
Yeah.
And you're the pickleball enthusiast.
That's right. We give pickleball lessons while we talk debits and credits.
Really?
Debits to the left, credits to the right. I can rap too.
Oh, we might get there. You're from Brooklyn, so you got it in the blood. It's poetry in motion. Look at you rapping.
That's right. Frank Sinatra, do it my way.
What do you tell the kids that go into your class? How do you introduce this subject?
Well, I start off by sometimes I put musical score up on the board. I put a treble clef. I put three or four notes and tell them to read it. Most people can't read it. And I said, this is... If you want to play music, you got to know the language of music. If you want to be in business, you got to know the language of business. And the language of business is accounting. And you can say accounting is boring, but it really isn't. It's a process. It's a nine-step process. And I show them a video on the nine-step process of what it is, from a transaction to the financial statement. I said, this could all be automated. And what you want to do is spend your time helping your clients, and I always use the same words, which I've already used once, liquid, solvent, and profitable. It's all about helping them make decisions. And that's what the fun part of accounting is. It's not doing journal entries. It's not posting to a ledger. And then from there, over a period of time. Sometimes I show them QuickBooks Online, the dashboard with cash flow, with business snapshots, and say, hey, this is what it's about. We only do a couple of transactions to show how you don't do it manually. When you go into a restaurant and the waiter or waitress takes the order on the iPad or the tablet, it automatically goes through the whole process, and I show them that. And then I get back to the exciting stuff of, hey, if you went out on a date tonight, and this is the first accounting class, you got no accounting. If they don't have any current assets, they don't have any cash, you're going to pay for the date. So we, you know, relate to the students.
So you're trying to bring it in so they could relate to it, and this is a bunch of Gen Zs that you're...
Depends on the class. If it's an afternoon class, it's probably young students. Like right now, sure. I'm teaching a managerial class on Tuesday nights. And most of them are adults in the work world. Some of them are just out of high school. So it's a combination. Some are in accounting, some are not. Most of them say they want to be in business. So yes, you know, what do you mean you want to be in business? What do you want to do? You know, then we get into, you know, why they have to know accounting. Or I'm going to be a hospital administrator. Or I'm in health. I want to be a race car driver. Let's relate to the accounting that goes with that stuff too.
Well, I love that you bridge in music into it too. And God, we've said this so many times, how the language of business, the language of life, I think, is music. And that's a whole other language to learn. But the one that I've grown up with is the numbers. And the numbers just came easy. My daughter wants to go into accounting. She's in high school. I guess it seemed logical to her because she likes math. Math comes easy. And it was something that she could always do like in the background too. Have some music on in the background and be doing the accounting work.
I think being an accountant today and being part of the, what do we say, 44,000 small CPA firms or small bookkeeping firms or small accountants, you make a great living and you can have lots of fun. I think we met at the BotKeeper conference in Boston. From there, I went to a Prime Global conference in Baltimore. Then I went to a BKR conference in Mexico City. Accounting has helped me because I'm there talking about how to be more efficient using the tools of accounting.
While surrounded by people in some beautiful places.
I love being surrounded by people and I love beautiful places.
Let's talk about this for my daughter's sake. She wants to go into accounting. Should she look at becoming a CPA? What are the options out there if you're somebody young looking to go into accounting?
Well, if she's young and she really likes it and she's going to look for a part-time job instead of working in a supermarket, a department store or something, look for an intern job. If she's good with numbers and she understands the accounting process, let her work, find a small practitioner for her to work for. At this stage, again, if she really likes it, I would recommend telling her to go online and become a pro advisor at QuickBooks or Xero, you know, whatever way she wants to go.
Certification.
Right. Because they have to learn. Have you ever looked at QuickBooks Online certification and become a pro advisor?
No, but I definitely did the Xero one because we require employees to get the Xero.
Okay, because you're a Xero guy. So same thing. But where you go is it's all self-learning. And, you know, practice it, learn it, and then go out and try it. There's always an opening for a Xero more for a QBO person, but Xero person too.
Practically, you're going to learn more from the doing than from the classroom when it comes to accounting. And what better way to do it than to start using one of the tools? And the tool that speaks the language of that is the GL and that speaks the language of business, that's where you go into Xero or QuickBooks or
Sage. But, you know, in all honesty, the majority of the small to medium-sized firms are using a small package. They're using a QBO or they're using the Xero, FreshBooks or Zoho. And I like Zoho because it's got every module you can possibly do for a small business to add on. And you're not really doing the tedious journal entries. You're seeing it on a screen. You're seeing it unveil in front of you. But you got to think from the head. Why do people need accounting? They need accounting because they need to make decisions. They're running a business. Why are they running a business? They're running a business because that's how they make a living. They need to make it profitable. What are you looking at? What do the numbers tell you? How can you reduce costs? How can you reduce your expenses? How can you increase your profitability? what should the mix be? Should it be selling these, you know, in managerial accounting now where dress shirts cost one amount, casual shirts cost another amount, and depending how you allocate the overhead costs, it looks like you're making money on both, but if you actually allocate costs the right way, you see you got to make some changes because you're not making any money by selling casual shirts for X dollars because they cost you Y dollars to produce. All of a sudden, it's different. They're looking at financial statements in the past. That's why I love managerial accounting.
But you're looking at it like connecting with people and solving their problems and figuring out ways to answer the questions and give them the information they need. This isn't just about the numbers themselves, or it isn't just about the
compliance
tasks
work
that you would be doing. The compliance, here you go, the compliance work. It's not necessarily about that. That stuff does have to get done. As you said earlier, that stuff is probably going to be mostly automated in the near future.
It has to get done. It's part of the necessary evil. But as a accountant, you want to help your client meet their compliance needs, but at the same time, they're not paying you the big bucks for the compliance because it didn't go anywhere. They're paying you because you're talking to them, you're meeting with them, you're listening to them, and you're helping them make decisions because you're asking them what their goals are and what they want to accomplish in life. And you got to help them do that along with doing the compliance work. So should your daughter become a CPA, a certified zero advisor, a certified pro advisor, a certified managerial accountant? Time will tell what's needed, but it's always better when you're marketing yourself to say you have some kind of certification. People don't necessarily understand what it is, but that's why I go back to marketing and positioning.
But what problem are you solving? And that's where the marketing comes in, because you position yourself as a person that can solve that problem for that specific person.
When you say you're a certified something, all of a sudden you're up a rung from someone who says, I'm a bookkeeper, I'm an accountant. You say, I'm a certified bookkeeper, I'm a certified accountant. Oh, this person's certified, they got some knowledge. Oh, you're certified in zero QuickBooks. And then you're marketing yourself as to you can solve the needs for that particular business. That's why people go into niches. They become experts on bowling alleys, craft breweries. You get one, you study it, you look for the angles. And then you start to promote yourself and say, hey, you know, I got this down pat. I've studied this business. I've studied the supply chain, and I've seen what's going on in this business. I see if I make some changes here for this client, they can be more profitable, liquid, and solvent. At the same time, I'm going to be a Randy Crabtree. I'm going to go and educate people on this particular thing, and they're going to come see me as the expert, and I'm going to help them. The money will come to me, but I got to solve their problems first and then educate you as to how I can help you and how you can help yourself.
I love that, because you got to build trust too with the marketing and with the positioning. And that only comes with being authentic and being transparent about what you can do. That's what Randy does. He goes out there and talks about tax credits because he's passionate about it. Then it brings in business for his firm.
He does it well. He knows the employee retention credit perfectly. And at the same time, he feeds them a craft beer and they follow him.
Exactly. Keeps the smiles on too. That's right. Now, there's all these other talking points out there, too. The 150-hour rule and this and that. I think it's a bunch of complaining. I don't think you should be talking about putting less burden on the education part of it to get a license. Now, a certification is a product of learning, and we're talking about the CPA. And showing that you can prove that you can take those tests and earn that proves that you're worthy of this license. So we have to uphold that. Do you see this as one of those necessary things that in the future we may not necessarily need, or is it just the next logical step that the next person can go into accounting with the certification?
Well, I think the world is changing and education system and technology is changing. So do you need 150 credit hours? Probably not, in my opinion. You have to do it. That's what the rule is. And I don't think it dissuades those that want to go into it. But one thing about accounting, law, medicine, you got to take continuing education courses for the rest of your life to keep your license. So, well, you know, what should you graduate with 120? You take a test. You're not solving the world's problems as soon as you first come out there, and you continue to learn. But again, with the biggest problem right now that I think we're facing, and people are not realizing this much, Are you a solo practitioner? Are you doing heavy audit work? Probably not. Am I doing heavy audit? I've done three audits really in my life as a solo practitioner. I'm never doing another audit again because risk, liability, changes, they go on to it. That's the heavy duty stuff. And there's actually, I think, 10 firms do like 69% of the public audits out there right now. So do I need all that audit education if I'm going to be a certified accountant, a certified public accountant who is advising clients and consulting with clients on how to be more liquid, solvent, and profitable? Probably not.
So tell me this. Why does my team think we need to hire CPAs? Why do I think that too? Why is that a restriction in our hiring process that we haven't been able to grow because we can't find anybody good? We can't find any good CPAs out there. Why is it? Why is that?
I think it's a bad mindset. I know bookkeepers that can run their rings around certified public accountants because they're in the books. Maybe you need to hire an enrolled agent that's taking a very difficult test on taxes.
I am an enrolled agent. My ops manager is an enrolled agent. That's a great idea.
You know, and you specialize in enrolled agents as a enrolled agent and tax expert of sorts. If you deal with collections for people, that's a specialty and a niche that solves a lot of problems. But again, the reason you might want to be a enrolled agent or a CPA attorney is because you want to be able to practice before the IRS. And that makes a difference.
So if you are doing taxes, if your firm is doing taxes, you would need some form of that licensure so you can help clients represent before the IRS. That's always how we looked at it too. And that's why we looked at the CPA as the most reasonable route, because most kids aren't out there getting their EAs. Clients referred to me as their CPA anyway. So it was more of a branding thing as well. They just thought I was their CPA. I correct them many times and they still call me a CPA. So
that's what I started with before. People don't know the difference. But do you need to hire CPAs? You need to hire smart people who understand the accounting process, and maybe data analytics people. Maybe a data analytics person will give you a whole different look on what you're doing and find some new niches for you to solve your clients with dashboards.
Yeah, start solving different problems for the clients. We were doing the taxes because they kind of had to, so we were there for that. Now let's start solving some different problems. Do you see a future where a lot of this is automated?
I see where it's 99% automated in the next 5 years, both on the accounting side and the tax side. The interesting part of the tax side is always hearing new people saying, we're going to open up a new tax company. We're going to do taxes differently. Even the IRS with its free file now. It's probably a private label, which I haven't looked at yet as somebody. But it's easier to do a federal tax return because it's federal. But they only start to add the states on, and it adds the complexity of it. Most new software companies aren't going to enter this industry unless technology is there, because to build state returns costs a lot of money. And you're not going to switch to do your federal return with one company and a state with another company.
And so it is hard because you've got some states where they got really, really heavy duty returns, and you're looking at 50 states right there. Not to mention certain locales too.
You're saying municipalities come underneath it also.
That's a reason why it's harder to automate these things, because some of these states, they still don't even take electronic filing for some of the returns too. So how are you going to automate that?
Right. Makes it difficult. But again, getting back to your firm, you should be marketing, positioning yourself using technology. You don't need all CPAs because, again, I go back to last week's accounting today, I guess what I'm talking about, the firm structure of CPA firms now. You know, even BDOs and ESOP are, you know, corporation now, employees. Is it a partnership model? Or, again, audits on one side of the house and professional services on the other side. So Scotty is a professional service firm. You're not an audit firm.
No. You know?
So it's Scott's professional services. We advise and consult and help you achieve your needs as a business. Don't do the accounting in-house. Hire us. You know, outsourcing is what every accounting firm is selling, even though they're sending it out of the country. But what a firm is doing. They're telling you to come back to the office, and then they're outsourcing everything to India, the Philippines, etc. So they were letting people work remotely.
They are letting people work remotely. I mean, we were doing remote work before COVID, but then nobody wanted to go back into the office. And that right there changed the dynamics. Think about that. Like, you have a person that works at the front desk. Are they needed anymore when you're fully remote? Yeah, that's what I found out afterwards. I'm trying to backfill it. Like, okay, what can we have this person do? What can we change this role to if we're 100% remote? But we just didn't need anybody to man the front anymore. Everything else was pretty much automated. And through that, we found, okay, what can we be most effective at with our clients? And that's just meeting with them. But you don't need a person to facilitate those meetings. You got Calendly, you got everything else. So our firm kind of runs a little bit differently. It's a lot leaner, and but I don't think we're agile. I don't think we're that agile because nobody's that willing to change anymore. Now that we've got our grooves and everybody's kind of set in what they're doing, it's a big burden for somebody to change their ways. Is it not? Like, if I said to everybody, we're going to go start using QuickBooks now, they all use Xero, they would leave. Some of them would probably leave because they don't want to learn something new.
And that's, you know, when I was first selling QuickBooks online, people were using desktop and people didn't want to switch. It would, because it's all about education and learning. So people are comfortable, whether it be Xero, QBO, Assert, CCH, Creative Solutions, they know it. Well, part of that is the education process, and why is it a benefit if we switch? Well, it might be a benefit switching from A to B because the population using B gives you exposure to many more thousands of possible prospects, and you can pick and choose and be niche-related because you're now in control. Let's say Jody Gruden, was a complete remote office after a certain point in time.
Yeah.
But when you hire new people, and that's really the problem now for a small firm like yourself or me, if I were to really hire someone, I'd have to bring them in because you got to train the people and you got to be, and I think, more personal than a Zoom meeting or a Teams meeting. But after they're part of the team and you've educated them, instructed them, then they could. I don't think you lose culture remote.
Definitely don't.
My culture is.
We still have. So we are all still all locally. We actually did have people that were in other parts of the U.S., but it just didn't really work out ultimately, like for different reasons. But the people that were here, that we're all going to an office, we get together maybe like once a month, and we have a great time as friends. Like that's kind of, and we do different things, and we keep that culture intact, and we keep that camaraderie intact, and all of that. But it's at a deeper level too. We have a deeper level of understanding for each other and empathy for each other and trust because we all have kind of grown to know each other, especially over the years. I don't know how to recreate that when you have people that are in different parts of the U.S. because I've tried, and usually that's retreats or events and things where people can physically get together, and that replaces months and months of just seeing that person every day in an office. You could have every 3 months or every 6 months a retreat that really fills up everybody's cup. I see Acuity doing it. Akenji and Matthew, they do a conference where they fly everybody in and everybody gets together, and that's the juice that takes everybody to the next phase, whatever that is, or keeps everybody connected to the company.
I believe like every 3 months you get together and you have some kind of meaningful interaction, whether it be playing pickleball, tennis, bowling, drinking. But you have to have an agenda. And each part of the agenda should be talking about the firm and what's going on at the firm and how to grow the firm and how you all can work together remotely and not have to be in person.
You said how to grow the firm. So why is that an important topic? Why can't firms stay still?
Well, if you stay still, you die and become stale. You have to keep... Well, you can stay still, but here's the question. Do you have a strategic business plan? Written plan? Is it a 5-year moving plan that changes every year? Now, you don't have to grow and get more clients. The way I'm looking at this now with these three buckets of marketing, positioning being one, technology advisory, if I was 20 years younger, I don't need a lot of clients. The ones that I have left, a lot of them are related to each other. And when you look at that, you can offer more services. And the services are in compliance work at this point. You get yourself 20 good clients, where you're doing advisory services as a solo practitioner and then build up that to 40 to 60, depending on the size you want to grow. You want to be a sole practitioner with three people working for you? You probably can get by with 100 clients and still pull in $750 to $1 million a year if you do it right.
But back to growth, I think every living organism needs growth over time, and organizations are living organisms in this case.
If you don't grow, you die, you get stale. I could be in full retirement mode, but then I get bored after a while. So I'm doing different activities. I'm now on the City of Groveland's Parks and Recreation Committee. I had to apply for
Parks and Rec. Yeah. David Parks and Rec.
Hey, what can I tell you? That's what the
your bucket hat?
My bucket hat. G for Groveland.
Now it's G for growth.
Yeah,
since we're on the subject.
And G for growth. And then the other day, the city councilman said, hey, we're looking for new auditors. Do you want to be on the audit committee to help us pick an auditor? That's good. I could say no, and then I'd have more free time, but then I'd get stagnant and my organism would die out. This gets me to use my mind.
But this is another way for to meet new people, to get involved in something else local that you're doing, and also become passionate about something else too.
Right.
You know, maybe it is doesn't sound that sexy, finding an auditor to do the books for something like that, and that's how some people would perceive it, but that's never been the case, the way that you've been looking at life.
It's kind of interesting. I'm going to help them pick an auditor. It'd be interesting to be on either side of it. You know, what questions am I going to ask? How are they going to differentiate themselves? What are they going to do for the city of Groveland? Why one versus another based on what we as accountants know what an audit is? You know, why do you choose? You know, I got to figure out why would we choose one over the other? I don't know at this point.
Yeah. I mean, it's also, again, you look at that with that curiosity and that growth mindset, the growth mindset and the scarcity mindset, and looking at that in the lens of accounting. I think some people have been looking at our profession with the scarcity lens, pipeline problem, the future's going to be automated, everything that people aren't going to need what we're doing anymore. And that's the fear mindset. Give me the future of accounting through a growth lens, Dr. Bergstein.
Okay, not that I'm a doctor, but I was a staff sergeant in the Army. Reserve.
Sergeant Bergstein.
As opposed to Sergeant Schultz, I don't know. I think the future of accounting is bright because technology is helping us reduce the mundane tasks that we all hate to do to automation. So it's going to let us do what we really were born to do as accountants. We are fiscal doctors as opposed to physical medical doctors. People come to an accountant because they want to be fiscally healthy. We know the numbers. We know the processes.
Fiscally fit.
Right? We know the relationships. We know the ratios. We know ways to look at things to give them ideas how to improve what they're doing. They may know their businesses. We may not know their businesses. But when we look at the numbers and we see variances, we see KPIs that are out of balance with everybody else in the similar industry, it lets us look and help them grow. So I think the growth is there, but do you have to be a 150-hour accountant, or do you have to have a knowledge of the accounting process? And even the CPA test today, you know, data analytics, business acumen, audit, tax, everybody's going in different areas. So you have to know something. So future accounting to me is bright if you want to go into accounting. Don't have to go into the top 15 firms, the top 100 firms. I read Reddit every day, and I read all the interesting stories that accountants are saying there, sitting at their desk, walking away from the work, ghosting the office, et cetera. And then I look at smaller to mid-sized CPA firms where people are having an enjoyable life, work-life balance, and they're learning at the same time they're helping their clients. So to me, the future of accounting is bright. Your daughter should go into it. You should get her to be a certified Xero or a certified QuickBooks. Let her do both. Let her give you her unbiased opinion of, and probably won't come out to be the same thing, but she'll still understand what accounting's all about and that it's not strictly about math.
Well, but and also the key is to start small. Start with places that you can have an impact. And if you're working for smaller firms, you can have an impact on the clients' lives and feel that. When you're working at these bigger firms, what kind of impact are you having? On who?
Well, you get to be good at vouching, good at bank reconciliation. But when I first started, I worked, by the way, for a small CPA firm in Manhattan. I started off just doing bank recs and a couple other things. But after a short period of time, they gave me the entire client. So I was junior accountant, six months into it. I'm out at the plumber doing their books, having conversations with them, asking them about their business, letting them explain what they do, finding out their pitfalls. And that's where I started to get into this advisory mindset. Hey, they don't want to sit there and do their books. They need somewhere. They don't want to write the checks. They don't want to have to go make deposits. They're looking for ways to make it quicker. With a zero or a QBO, one of the things I did with QBO is I taught the contractor, when you go out to do an estimate, take the iPad with you, and when you leave, give them the estimate. And that increases business tenfold, rather than I'll get back to you taking paper and pencil and then they never get back to you with an estimate. That changes the business.
Yeah, so being able to help clients and being able to work directly with clients happens when you're working in some smaller environment where there's trust and there's, you know, I guess a little bit more hands-on too, where you could be, where you have that opportunity, because then you get to see the real difference that this language makes. Being fluent in the language of business is an incredibly powerful skill. And I only really learned that from working directly with clients and working with the stuff that mattered. It was the numbers that told the story. And at the end of the day, even though what we were getting paid for was tax return, you were really making a difference in this person's life, because all the stuff that they stressed out about is being handled. And now they're freer and they're happier. You know, now I'm actually in that boat where I think it's boring. I can't go back into the accounting. I couldn't imagine doing 1099s anymore now that I haven't been doing them for long enough.
Well, when you do them electronically, it's a little bit easy. You just press a button.
Yeah, we were doing it electronically too. It wasn't like we were doing that much, but I still can't imagine pressing too many buttons in the day, all those tasks.
And then having to go back, you have to press the button to file from pending to acceptance to make sure it's done. You still got a lot of steps in the process.
Well, we all know, our students definitely know, because a lot of them are still in it. It sounds like you found some kind of balance or struck a balance between spreading your wings, going out and traveling and doing all this other fun stuff to still having an impact on some clients. You still have clients you work with, still doing 1099s.
Hey, I do what I have to do.
Is it a hustle, or do you do it because you like the people and you want to help them and you don't want to let them down and tell them they can do it somewhere else?
It's because I like the people and I want to help them. Actually, I'm in the millennial and the baby boomers body, but my clients are mainly baby boomers now. But they've given me their children, and their children are millennials and younger, and I'm trying to push them towards other accounts. I have friends that I'm giving the business to, because I don't want to keep working with the younger people, because they...
Why not? What do you got against the younger people?
Because I'll be dead before they finish their business.
I thought you're that millennial spirit, though. Yes. Your spirit will live on.
You know, I enjoy working with them, but I want to give them someone else to count on for the next 15 years. Because the other part of this is, yes, I do want to stop doing the deadlines. Because the one thing about accounting, and people can complain all they want, is, you know, I don't want to be accounting because we have deadlines. The deadlines are compliance related. They're never going to go away. So,
and it comes around the next year.
Right, so you got to do it. So I really want to get out of that portion of it. So like the daughter of one of my clients said, you want to do my 1099s and W-2s? I said, no. I said, I've got you on a system. Utilize the system to do it. I have her on QuickBooks Online and told her to use the full service QuickBooks Online.
Payroll. QuickBooks does the 1099s now.
Right, and payroll. Yeah, so.
Oh, okay, okay.
You know, she could do the 1099s herself. You set up the contractors. When you set them up and you press a button, boom, done.
Yeah, yeah. It's easy. It's fairly straightforward, and a lot of this is a lot easier to do. I got nothing against Intuit or QuickBooks.
No, I realize that. We all choose different things that we get comfortable with.
But if you have to change and you're forced into a position that you need to use a product, you do want to use the best one available in the market. And so how do you do some of your market research with all the products out there now? And you consult with a lot of them. How do you determine which ones you're going to use?
Word of mouth, recommendations. You're always going to get bad recommendations on a product, no matter what. There's always going to be people that don't like it. But I'll call up three or four different people. And if three or four different people give me excellent recommendations, I'll go that way, even if I heard a bad recommendation. But
sure.
The other thing I do in choosing apps, which I find kind of interesting, is I'll go out to the QBO App Center. I'll go out to the Xero App Center. I'll go out to the Intact App Center. And I'll notice some apps are on all three. And I look at it. But the way I look at it, when I look at the QBO App Center and Xero App Center on a particular product, whether it's good for Xero or QuickBooks Online, how many people have left a recommendation? So you look at, like, say, Bill.com, which goes every which direction. You know, how many people on QBO App Center recommended and liked it? How many on the Xero App Center liked it? How much on the Sage Intact like a particular thing? Comments on it. Have you ever looked at the App Center and see they got the number of recommendations?
I love those. Yeah, that's a very trustworthy place to go just to look at what the feedback of the community is saying. And then I like your idea to go even further and to check other ones. And then there's also G2. That you can go to kind of get another overhead perspective for some of these tech.
And then I'll look at the reviews that are out there from different companies, the self-serving ones and the non-self-serving ones.
Sure, sure. And some of them have self-serving reviews on their own websites and everything's very clean on their website. So you're looking to the streets to tell you.
It's because I'm from Brooklyn. We look to the streets.
Hey. So do you miss Brooklyn?
I get back there once in a while, but more Long Island because my kids are on Long Island. So
okay.
The area has changed to where I came from. The prices are ten times higher. Again, I can say I grew up in a 4-story walk-up tenement, which is true, but we call them apartment buildings, not tenements. And then, when I went to high school, I graduated to a elevated building, an apartment building. People don't think about that, walking up 4 stories with groceries as opposed to living on the ground floor and not have to walk up 4 stories.
Oh, without an elevator.
Right. Because in the city of New York, you didn't need an elevator in a 4-story building. You needed it in a 5-story building.
Oh, and all the 4-story buildings. So the person that lived on the 4th floor is doing a lot of walking.
Carrying a shopping cart all up to 4 stories.
I'll bet the people that were more physically fit that lived up higher up.
That's why I'm a pickleball player. Okay.
Oh, man. I love it. David, thank you for coming on. Give our students at Accounting High some inspirational motivation. A lot of our students are actually active firm owners and runners, but also it's that next generation that could be looking at potentially open up a firm of their own one day.
Well, I actually had a past student of mine at Valencia College who's now going to UCF. She's working in a restaurant that I go to. She's finishing a degree. She wanted to interview me, but she wants to be an accountant and wanted to interview me for the college. And one recommendation for everybody watching is make sure you read the trade publications. She didn't know anything about Accounting Today, CPA Practice Advisor, Insightful Accounting. All the professors at college kept talking about is Journal of Accountancy, AICPA pronouncements. Learn what's going on in the profession. You'll see that it's exciting if you read the trade presses. There's lots of stuff out there that'll say, hey, this is cool. I didn't know about it that accountants are doing this. That's my advice for firm owners, etc. Look at these things.
Yeah. Well, what's the difference with the Journal of Accountancy and the Accounting Today or CPA Practice Advisor?
Well, Accounting Today is more a newspaper. It gives you what's going on in the industry. Journal of Accountancy will give you technical articles, very little on what's happening on a daily basis with professional services, with changes and what's going on.
With new acronyms to have fun with.
Right. So the Accounting Today, CPA Trendlines, which I like also, they're free publications. CPA Practice Advisor, they're all free. But they're letting you know what's really going on in the profession. Well, as some people say, industry. I still call it a profession. A lot of people call it an industry.
So keep your ear to the streets. Listen to the streets. And that's the people of the profession, too. The ones that are writing these articles and a lot of these free publications, it's the practitioners that are writing the articles. And the people like the Randy Crabtrees of the world or the Dave Bergsteins.
Or your Ed Mendelowitz. He's still
Ed Mendelowitz. He's writing for all 5 of them. Right. He's got the full house over there, the flush of articles for everybody. Yeah, yeah. So appreciate you coming on. Thank you. And we're going to ride us out with the other Accounting High theme music. Class dismissed. Accounting High.